Hey, thanks so much for checking out this episode of Golf Strategy School. Now, I know you're listening because you want to learn how to play better golf. But if you want to see how you compare to other golfers your age, you need to check out parforsuccess.com/griffin. That is par, the number four, success.com/griffin, G-R-I-F-F-I-N. And what it will do is it will actually give you a free assessment where you can see exactly how you measure up against other people your age. And you can see where you're excelling, where you need to focus your time on. And this is an assessment, honestly, that you can take once a month just to see how you're progressing throughout your golf journey. So again, check out parforsuccess.com/griffin to see how you measure up against other golfers your age. Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Marty here. I just wanted to hop on quick and apologize that the sound quality is not quite as good as I'm normally used to for this episode. We were having some internet issues, and so it was kind of choppy in parts, but I did my best to fix it. Honestly, this is a nice little lesson, just like in our golf games. That stuff doesn't always go to plan, but we still got to roll with the punches and make the best out of it. So with that in mind, let's get on with the show!
Hello, friends, and welcome to a conversation unlike any other. Our Sunday Conversations, brought to you by the Golf Strategy Academy and Golf Strategy School.
Whoa, hold up. That's all good and fun, but what we're doing here is we're talking to real golfers just like you. People who are struggling with consistency, struggling to break 90, and we are digging deep, finding out what's holding them back, and helping them make a plan towards success and achieving their goals going forward. And with that being said, let's bring on our next guest. Hey, what's up, everybody? Marty back here with you again. Thank you for joining me on one of our Sunday conversations. I am joined today by the world famous, we will say, Golf Girl 505. Cassie is joining us on the podcast today. Cassie has a handicap just about 30. Her best score ever, though, is a 93. So she knows she has it in her to shoot those low numbers. Really kind of working on that short game chipping putting right now for this year and getting out there to practice at the minimum of once per week. So Cassie, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. How are you doing?
Oh, Marty, I'm doing awesome, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we kind of connected over Twitter because I don't even remember what it was. Like the first post of yours that I had seen was about something about like kind of keeping things together mental game wise. And I kind of gave you a couple tips there and you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to definitely put that into practice. And we've kind of just been going back and forth a little bit ever since. So it's really good to make this connection official and have you on the show. So
absolutely.
Thanks again for joining.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on your podcast. This is exciting.
So the first question that I always ask everybody, and I think it's a good way to kind of get to like the heart of the issue for people, is what are your golf goals over like the next 12 months or over the rest of the season for you?
My main goals definitely this season and for the next year or so is to work on my short game like I've been trying to do, lower my putting strokes, no more three putts, no more sculling my chip shots because I'll have some decent range and then my chip shots like boom, I overshoot it. So I really want to hone in on that short game. And then of course, like film more episodes and put out some more golf content for my channel as well. But just definitely working on my short game is my main goal.
Yeah. And as a fellow content producer, I understand how hard it is to consistently put out content. This podcast has been going for over 5 years now. And it's one of those things where it's just like, sometimes you just don't feel like you have it, but you got to kind of dig deep, find something that does kind of get you excited or passionate. And then you kind of, it's okay to take it a little bit, you know, maybe off the golf topic. I think my favorite thing about your channel is the fact that you mix the golf and the beers, because being from Wisconsin, beer's like 35% of my life.
Yeah.
Brandy old fashions are another 20% all on their own.
Oh, I'll make you a good old fashioned.
Excellent. So, you know, we talk about short game being important, and I certainly have preached about this. No, I don't, for you listeners out there, I don't just pick people who say, yes, I want to work on my short game so I can get up on my soapbox. But it does give me that opportunity to talk about how important that is. And so you know, when we're talking about working on the short game, like why specifically for you are you trying to hone that short game? Like, I guess what's the next level goal where you see a good short game getting you?
Well, I think it'll save me some scores. It'll help me lower my handicap. I have so many opportunities where I've got a greens in regulation, and because my putting is off, I'm not really paying attention to how I'm holding my putter. If anybody does follow me on Twitter and Instagram, like I recently have been posting that I just got fitted for my putter, and honestly, it really has helped a lot. So, you know, even if I'm like on in three strokes and I'm putting for a par and I two putt for bogey, like I'm trying to accomplish bogey golf, like at my level right now, like that, if I could just play bogey golf, I'd be fine. I mean, of course I want to play better, but just like minimizing my three putts, you know, trying to get it down to one putt and two putt. I think it'll just make me a better golfer, I guess. Like everybody wants to putt, you know?
Yeah, it's the old adage of drive for show and putt for dough. So when we talk about putting, do you feel like it's line or length that is the bigger issue for you? Is it distance or direction?
I think it's probably a combination of both, because I've totally fumbled up on like a 1 foot putt, or like not even that, you know, like I've screwed up on a putt where it's right there and I'm like, oh my God, why, how did I do that? You know? And it's so frustrating. So I think it's definitely a combination. And I've been able to like drain some long putts, like when I'm like, yeah, freaking Tiger Woods over here draining like a 30 foot putt or something, but that was just luck, not skill at all. It was all luck.
Yeah, when you look at like the statistical averages for PGA Tour and stuff like that, you know, anything outside of really about 8 or 10 feet starts to really fall into that more towards that luck category. So I definitely know what you mean there. One thing that I always kind of point out for people, especially if they're having putting issues, I like to see people learn from the cup backwards. So 5, maybe 6 feet, probably 4 or 5 feet around the cup. You want to get really proficient there first. And then if you can get proficient and comfortable there and confident there, then it's going to be a lot less stressing to have like a 20 or a 30 foot putt, because you know that if you can just lag it into that kind of 4 to 5 foot bucket, then you're going to be in that confident zone. And so now all of a sudden, because you're more confident from 4 or 5 feet, when you're putting out from 20, 25, 30 feet, you don't have that stress. You don't have that pressure. It allows you to make a more consistent, comfortable, confident stroke on it. Nice. So that's one of the first places is that I kind of, if you get to thinking about not necessarily the practices that you would do first, but just the kind of the conceptual process of how you want to learn. And I think it's important to learn the entire game from the cup backwards, because if you do that, you're building all those layers of comfort and confidence in.
Yeah.
Does that sound like something that you would be up for going forward, is kind of practicing the game backwards?
Yeah. Was it you on Twitter that I was talking to that was like, hey, practice like at your home course, you know, at like the back of your hand, like doing that backwards practice, like from the greens to the tee? But that was you, right?
Yes. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And it's really, it has been helping me. Like every time I've been going out there since we talked about that, it's definitely made it easier to just break it down, especially at my home course. Cause like, I do know it like the back of my hat, like, oh, this hole number 4 is 300, whatever yards or whatever. And it has helped me a lot with breaking it down like that. So yeah, I like that concept of playing from the cup backwards. It kind of just helps you figure it out. Me anyway, it's helping.
Yeah, I think a lot of amateurs, they kind of fall into that trap of, oh, it's a par 4 or a par 5. I have to hit driver and I have to go as far as I can with the shot, and then I have to get as close as I can with the next shot. But in reality, if we kind of pick our target a little bit more, we might be a little bit better off in terms of our total score. So when we talk about playing backwards, the reason that we like to do it this way is not only because it builds the confidence in what your next shot would be, but it also helps you kind of layer the skills and not
not stretch yourself beyond what is kind of immediately possible. You know, if you think about trying to make like a 5 or 6 foot putt and then trying to lag a 30 foot putt into a 5 or 6 foot circle, that's not world beatingly difficult. But if you're saying, hey, I want to make my 5 or 6 foot putt, then I want to go and I want to make my 30 foot putt. That's kind of world beatingly difficult.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Or if you even take it from like that, hey, I'm making my 5 or 6 foot putt and now I want to go step back at 150 yards and hit it to 10 feet. Like those are such huge gaps in not just skill and ability, but like levels and years worth of learning.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it really helps people to kind of take these like micro steps. And by taking these little tiny micro steps, you don't have these big backslides where, you know, you get upset with yourself and you're not improving as fast as you want. And, you know, you throw your arms up and you say, the hell with this game. You know, that doesn't happen as much.
Start throwing your clubs in the lake. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. The helicopters come out. So when you take,
I can't play with guys like that, man, to be honest. Oh,
it's terrible.
It does help sometimes though, when I watch like some of the pros and they're just like chunking it. Like I'll watch the bloopers of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, cool, man. You know, even the pros get double bogeys and triple bogeys too. You know, they have their shit. Sorry. Can I say shit on your show?
Yeah, sure.
They have bad game. You know, they have bad days too. So, you know, and that kind of helps me get out of my head sometimes. You know, it's like, everybody has a crap day. Everybody has a good day.
And I think that's why a lot of people like the US Open so much, is because that's typically like an incredibly difficult course with like 9 foot long rough. And they like seeing the pros shoot over par. It's like, hey, I can do that. Plus nine.
Right?
Woo. All right.
That's me on the first three holes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and when, you know, when we talk about like emotions and things like that, you know, to be able to let a shot go can be difficult for a lot of people. I personally have a post shot routine for good and for bad shots. I give myself 20 paces when I'm hitting like an approach shot to either curse or praise the previous swing. And then I take those 20 paces. It's like, okay, time to let that one kind of drift into the background and get going on what the next shot needs to look like. Do you have any process like that? How do you deal with your, you know, with your mess ups?
I just try to think like there's a saying, I don't remember who said it. It was a famous golfer. And he said, the most important shot in golf is the next.
Yes.
And it's kind of like our motto, like at my home course, one of the guys that runs the pro shop, he says that pretty often in like the emails and things like that. And that kind of sticks with me, you know, and I try to just, honestly, my good shots screw me up way more than my bad shots, because I get so excited, like, oh my God, I just made a birdie, you know? And then I'm so excited about that last birdie. And then I get out of focus for the next tee box or whatever. And so, yeah, I try to just like shake it off. Taylor Swift, that bad shot, shake it off, you know?
Well, as a tailor-made golfer and a father to a tailor, yeah, I've heard that more than a few times. Well, it's really cool that you know, you're at least aware of the necessity of kind of leaving that previous shot behind you. I think it's really cool that you recognize that good shots can be just as detracting and detrimental in terms of, you know, leaving that shot in the past. Everybody thinks about the blow-up holes and, oh, I've got to be able to shake off that blow-up hole. That way it doesn't turn into 2 or 3 blow-up holes. Well, getting a little bit out and over, too far over your skis can be just as bad. If you're coming off of a hot stretch and you're just going gangbusters, absolutely, trying to knock down like every single pin that you see, it's inevitable that you're going to run into one that is hanging out over a bunker or, you know, out over water, a true sucker pin. And when you stumble there, it could be twice as catastrophic as the 2 or 3 holes, you know, good holes that you may have put together leading up to it. So I always like it when,
absolutely,
when people have a process in place for those, you know, either those good shots or those bad shots. Everybody always talks about the bad shots because it's kind of that automatic negative thought process that everybody is just kind of innately has baked into them. But it's really cool that you recognize that you need to be on top of your game for your good shots too.
Yep.
When we look at the short game specifically, and especially with putting, if you're, you know, if you're getting on your greens in regulation or kind of around the greens in like that regulation space, putting is such a huge thing. We talked earlier about having the four, the 5 footers, having confidence in those. The way that I always like to kind of get that process going. So there's really just a few things that we have to do with putting. And then it, like, once we have like the few super fundamentals down, then it all comes down to controlling the pace, because the speed is what truly determines the line.
Yeah.
One of the things that I always recall my dad saying was, they're all straight if you hit them hard enough. So the speed creates the line, but before we deal with the speed, we have to make sure that we're actually hitting the ball with a square club face, and we have to make sure that we're hitting the middle of the club face. The two ways that I like to accomplish that, what type of putter do you have? Do you have like a mallet putter or a blade putter?
I have a blade putter. It's kind of an older Ping Anser, I think the 5 series.
Gotcha. I know exactly what ones you're talking about. Yep.
I like the weight of it. It's comfortable, and I don't like the big thick putter grips.
Okay.
I just have like a regular putter grip.
Sure.
I don't like those big thick ones. They're weird. They weird me out.
Gotcha. So especially with the blade putter, this gets even easier. I don't know if you guys in New Mexico have junk drawers, but in Wisconsin we have junk drawers where it's just like all of the accumulated stuff goes there. And so there's always usually like 8,000 to 9,000 rubber bands in that drawer, at least in our
house. I keep saying during this quarantine, I'm going to clean that junk drawer out.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah. Oh, we have junk drawers.
So you can take junk drawers, or like I've said a couple times, I got daughters. I literally have hair ties laying around in my podcast studio. You take hair ties, work really well too. And you wrap them around the toe and the heel of your putter, leaving only about a golf ball and a half wide middle untouched sweet spot in the center. Oh. And you can just practice taking your putting stroke and hitting the sweet spot, because if you hit any of those hair ties or rubber bands, it's going to go every which way but loose. So that's a really easy way, especially at home on quarantine, to practice kind of hitting the sweet spot, the middle of that putter face. And the reason why we want to work on that as one of our two fundamentals is because if you hit a putt out on the toe, the dissipation of energy in terms of the transfer into the ball is huge. So if you catch a putt out on the toe, not only will it probably start a little bit offline, but you're only going to have maybe 60% of the power that you intended in that putt because it didn't hit the sweet spot. So that's something that I like to have people do, is just wrap a bunch of rubber bands or hair ties around the heel and the toe of the putter, so they only really have that sweet spot to hit. And you don't want to make it like impossibly small, but you want to leave yourself probably just a little bit more, like a golf ball and a half space.
Okay.
In the middle of that putter. Yeah. And just practice making good contact. It doesn't even necessarily matter, you know, what you're aiming at. You don't have to have like a, you know, a 10-foot clear space that you're, you know, trying to aim it down, but just to hit the middle is really, really huge. And then the other thing is getting that putter face square at the beginning. And the way that I like to have people do that is to set up what's called a putting gate. You just take two of anything. It could be coffee mugs, it could be extra golf balls, whatever you want to do. And you set up a gate that you have to roll your ball through. I usually like people starting out around 4 or 5 feet long, and then they put that gate right in the middle. So it's about 2 feet away from them, and then 2 feet to whatever their target is. So if you have like a coffee cup or a tumbler sitting down and you're putting into that, you want to put two golf balls down that you have to roll the ball between. And again, we want it to be a challenge So we want it to be probably about a golf ball and a half again, or maybe two golf balls if you're struggling to roll it through there. And then you can practice those two things together. You got your rubber bands or your hair ties on your putter, and you're just trying to roll that ball through the gate. And if you can do that, you're hitting the middle of the putter, and B, you are hitting the ball square because you're actually starting it on your intended line. So
that sounds awesome.
Two real simple things that you can do just to kind of accelerate that learning curve on the greens. Because once you can do that, once you can get the ball started on a straight line and off the middle of the face every time, those 4 and 5 footers are going to start falling at a much, much higher percentage.
Absolutely.
And, you know, at that point, I mean, really, 4 footers, they don't have a ton of time to break. So I'm a big proponent from like 3 or 4 feet, just aim right in the middle of the cup and bounce that sucker off the back.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, let gravity do the work. I like that idea. So, and if you know that you're hitting it in the middle of the face and you know that you're hitting it square, that becomes even easier. Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting our 4, 5, 6 footers sharpened like that is really, really beneficial. Once we have that down, then we want to start working on the speed aspect. And with the speed aspect, this is something that I've talked about a bunch on the podcast. It's my absolute number one most favorite thing. It's the thing that I think every single golfer, regardless of skill level, should do as the last thing before they set foot on the tee box for that day. And that is the 6-foot putting ladder. So you find a straight putt on your practice green, and you set up putts in 6-foot intervals all along the same line. So you've got a 6-footer, 12-footer, 18, 24, and 30-footer. You are then also going to take a club, and you're going to lay it about 2-3 feet behind the cup. The idea is that we want to make the putt, of course. We want to make every putt. But in order for us to move on to the next ball, it has to either go in the cup, it has to get to the cup. So even if you don't make it, you have to get the ball to the cup. But it cannot touch that club behind the cup.
Ooh.
So you have like this little safety zone that is starting at the cup and stopping at that club behind it. And if the ball lands anywhere in there, you're totally fine. You move on to your next putt. You go through your entire pre-shot routine, and then you hit the shot. If you make it, or if you land in that safety zone, now you're moving on to that 18 footer. But if at any point along the way you fail, and you will, because everybody does, you have to set up the whole thing over again, and you have to start from the beginning.
Okay. That's some good practice.
So you have to successfully do that, you know, 5-6 times in a row in order to quote unquote pass the drill. That way, what you're doing is you're really kind of ingraining the speed of that course for the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just coming up with an idea like the other night, well, last night, and I posted a silly video, but cause I play guitar and I like was practicing in my band room, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I need to start picturing my guitar behind the cup, and I don't want to hit my guitar. So, you know, that'll help me with my speed control. Cause I'll crush it with my putt sometimes, and it just goes flying past the cup. And so that's what, like literally like a week ago, I was like, all right, this is what I'm going to start doing to start practicing, like controlling my speed. So that combined with your putting the club behind there on the greens, cause I'm not going to bring my guitars to the course. I mean, I could, but it might be weird. Yeah. So that's
just be out there at the turn, just playing a song for everybody. Like, hey, you could buy me my next beer with a 5 or 20.
Yes. We could start a little golf band together.
Yeah, there we go. Once we've got our short game tuned to the point of on the green, we've got our, you know, our 6-foot putting ladder is going to take care of most of our lag putting issues. You know, if you just stick to that thing until you can consistently lay it into that, you know, 4-ish foot zone. And then because you've been practicing with your hair ties, rubber bands, and putting gate, you're going to be really, really confident in that 4, 5, 6 foot zone. Then we get out to kind of those green side, those, You know, is it a putt? Is it a chip? Which way should I approach it? So, you know, if I kind of paint this picture for you, you've got a 40-foot shot. You are 8 feet off the green. So you know that it's probably not realistic to putt. But you've got, you know, 32 feet of green in front of you. How are you going to approach that shot?
I would usually try like one of my wedges or my 9-iron and do like the baby putt with the 9-iron to get the bump and run kind of thing going.
Okay.
Or I'll just screw it up and shank the whole thing and wind up in the bunker on the other side of the green.
Excellent. Well, I love the fact that you said bump and run because that's the right answer. When it comes to short shots, greenside chips, things like that, we actually want the ball on the ground as soon as possible. So the first question we always ask ourselves is, can we putt? If we can putt, we do putt. Doesn't matter if it's 3, 4, 5 feet off the green. But if you're, you know, if you're kind of in that 8, 10-ish feet off the green and you're like, realistically, that's probably not doable, then you want to get into kind of that bump and run area. Because if you were to gather a group of 10 golfers and you handed them each one golf ball and you stood them on the edge of the green and you said, hey, I want you to throw this golf ball as close as you can to that cup. What do you think they're going to do? Are they going to bowl it out there, or are they going to try and take like an NBA jump shot and, you know, throw the flop shot version of the golf ball?
Right. Yeah.
They're going to bowl it out there.
Yeah.
So that's why we want to go ahead and do that same type of thing. And when it comes to touch on those shots, it's that same thought process. Okay. If this ball is in my hand and I'm standing right where the shot's going to occur, and I were to throw it out there, like how hard would I throw it? How fast would my arm be moving when I let it go to get it to roll out? And that's essentially the speed of the shot when we do our bump and run. That's the speed of the swing.
Yeah.
So it's just a way to kind of to take something that would be very natural for you, which is just tossing a ball underhand, and then translate that into our golf game. And how do we do that? Well, we take our 9-iron or our 8-iron, or, you know, for some people it's a 5-iron, whatever they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And hit that bump and run shot. But, you know, so many people struggle with that distance because like they're still getting their wrists into it and they're flipping at it and scooping, and even more so when the wedge is in the hand. So that's why I like the longer club. Yep, exactly. And that's when you get scully and bladey and probably not as much molder, just scully. Just Scully, no Mulder. Sorry, David Duchovny. We're leaving you out. Yeah. Hooray, X-Files jokes. Bet you didn't think you're going to get that on a golf podcast.
Totally did it, but I love that we did. We went there, man.
Indeed. It's that same process of, you know, like how do we boil down to like the root cause, the most important single factor? You know, one of them is going to be a decision, and that's the club and getting it on the ground as soon as possible rather than taking a wedge. And the other one is the process. And that is the kind of, how would I bowl this out onto the green toward my cup? Does that sound like something you think you might be able to practice? I know in your backyard area, it looks like you have some room, not a ton, but is that something you think you might be able to do? Just kind of practice landing a shot in a certain area?
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I do. I have my little target set up in my backyard. I don't have a lot of grass, and so the grass that I'm using are these like scraps of fake turf that my grandma gave me because she put fake turf in her yard or whatever. But most of my yard is just like dirt and rock, and then I have my little bucket set up and I try to just hit those targets when I'm out there.
Yeah, and you can make it as simple as very much like how we were doing our 6 foot putting ladder with a scoring zone behind the cup. You know, you've laid out a 3 foot zone behind the cup. Well, maybe you lay out a 5 foot zone when you're chipping where the ball has to land in between these two obstructions. And if I can land the ball in that 5 foot zone, then I know I'm accomplishing my goal. And if you really want to get creative and you really want to take it over the top, you can do what I call the eliminator. And so you have your whole bag with you. you set out, you know, whether like a pool noodle, a specific rock, something to identify. I mean, if you've just got dirt, hell, spray paint the ground. Identify a landing zone that you want to work in. And then what you do is you take your favorite club, like the club you think you would do that the best with, and you hit it into that 5 foot zone. And as soon as you hit it into that 5 foot zone, that club stays out of the bag and you have to pick a different club. And then you have to hit that club into the 5 foot zone. It gets hard real quick. But the idea is that you want to make practice harder than the game. That way, when you go out to play the game, it's easy in comparison.
Easier. Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea. I'm going to try that tomorrow. Like, I have time now.
Unfortunately, yeah, we all have a little bit more time. So looking at, you know, at those parts of your short game, you know, kind of taking it from just off the green, kind of based on what we were talking about before the podcast started, and on through the green, do you feel that kind of covers the lion's share of your issues, or is there anything else that you feel is still needing a little bit of attention?
I think it definitely covers the majority of my short game issues.
Awesome. Well, super thank you. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for bringing some levity to this confusing and somewhat claustrophobic time, because we all have to stay in our houses. But it was an absolute awesome chat. Thank you so much.
This was so much fun. Thank you, Marty.
All right. Thanks for listening to this episode of Golf Strategy School. As always, if you want to keep it in the short grass, all you got to do is put those lessons into effect. And if you want to see exactly how you fare in terms of your physical performance to other golfers your age, head over to par4success.com/griffin, and you'll be able to see exactly where you line up and match up with other golfers your age based off of this free performance assessment that Chris and his team has put together. Again, that's par4success.com/griffin to see exactly how well you line up against other golfers your age. And I'll just drop a link to it in the show notes.